Joining me now on Dry River Jazz is Mr. Nels Cline. He's best known as guitarist and sonic alchemist for the band Wilco. But you also know him on this show for his band, the Nels Cline Singers. He has a new album out of rather straight-ahead jazz called Lovers, and I'm thrilled to have him calling in now. Mr. Cline, welcome to the Dusty Banks.
Hello, Trevor. Thank you.
I first saw you perform with Wilco back in 2008 at Pope Joy in Albuquerque. And I remember being quite taken by your performance.
It certainly has changed my life playing with Wilco, I'll say that.
Well, let's get into that a little bit, because before that, you were certainly known for your more avant-garde-leaning music, and it seems like you were never really at a loss for being in demand, but I also understand it maybe wasn't as financially rewarding as being in a band like Wilco could be.
Well, that was the contrast is quite stark, to be honest. I was barely surviving before I joined Wilco, to be honest. Not a guy who has much hustle in him, and living in Los Angeles was a challenge for the improviser, I would say, even though I had great people to play with and great experiences in my hometown. It wasn't particularly lucrative. I spent most of my time going up and down the coast playing things that Scott Amendola actually had worked up in the Bay Area mostly at that time.
How did you actually cross paths with Wilco?
I met Jeff Tweedy when I was playing in a band called the Geraldine Fibbers as a substitute guitar player in 1996, and we were opening for Golden Smog on tour. Yeah, so Geraldine Fibbers really caught into Jeff Tweedy of the various Golden Smog gentlemen. And eventually I ended up opening for Wilco. That's, I think, when maybe it was Glenn who suggested to Jeff, because I think Jeff was looking for someone in addition to Pat Sansone to replace Leroy Bach, the departing Leroy.
You are credited, I think, now with bringing a lot of experimental elements to Wilco. But, of course, those were already in place from pretty much their second album onwards. So it seemed to feel like just a rather perfect progression for Wilco to bring you in, somebody who can do sound design, as you mentioned, create an orchestra of sound that really doesn't exist in the natural world, and bringing that element to Wilco. So it
wasn't even my intent, to be honest. I mean, I just wanted to fit in.
Uh-huh.
You know, I just wanted to see what I was going to do. By the time I joined, the band had just finished A Ghost Is Born, on which Jeff plays some, you know, utterly remarkable guitar. And so I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do. And when I asked Jeff, he said, well, you know, let's just figure it out later. So he still plays some of the solos and that he played on that record, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I do other things. But my intent was not to sonically change Wilco. It was really just to sort of fit in the orchestra, and I think I gradually brought some of my language in to see how it would work, and it was, I would say, readily embraced. So I kind of forged ahead in that direction a little bit, but for the most part, I'm playing pretty straightforward, you know, rock and country rock guitar.
I knew your work from Wilco, and then I stumbled upon a track called Wicked Good by Alan Pasqua, and I was listening. I go, this is incredible. Who's on guitar? And there it was, Nels Klein. And I said, of course. And then through all that, then I finally was able to discover Nels Klein singers and this entire world of Nels Klein music, whereas before, it should have been obvious to me, but it wasn't.
I'm quite grateful, and I have to say that I am kind of stunned and bemused and really happy that your little entry into my whatever my hideous oeuvre has been the Alan's Antisocial Club record, which was a Cryptogramophone record that I'm sure virtually no one heard, and that has Jimmy Haslip from the Yellow Jackets, Scott Amendola,
mm-hmm.
Ambrose Agnusu is on that record, and you think he was just straight out of USC at that point.
Yeah,
I don't know. Anyway,
it
was a super fun session, and I'm amazed because I actually really like that record. Of the many records I've played on, that's actually kind of a favorite. I know that it was Alan's. He intentionally wanted to make what he was terming a kind of early 70s jazz rock record. And man, that's right in my wheelhouse.
How did you get into jazz, Nels?
I heard John Coltrane's Africa, and that was the beginning of a trek that my twin brother Alex and I really just began in a friend's apartment after hearing Africa, which led, this was in 1971, I believe, could have been 1970, but I think it was 71, and led us to Miles Davis, which led us to Weather Report, which led us to the Tony Williams Lifetime, which led us to, and Coltrane led us to Eric Dolphy, and Eric Dolphy led my brother somehow to the Art Ensemble of Chicago and Anthony Braxton, and that was the story.
Mm.
We had to go back to the straight-ahead so-called world. We didn't start there. Started with this Coltrane obsession, which kind of dovetailed into my obsession from an early age with Indian classical music. And I didn't know when I was listening to Africa that I was listening to something that was either called modal jazz or anti-jazz, depending on who was describing it. I just knew it was haunting and beautiful and enthralling, you know.
Were you already playing guitar when you discovered John Coltrane?
Yes, I was. I was a terrible guitar player when I was young. I was really into the Allman Brothers Band, and the reason I played guitar was because of Jimi Hendrix.
Mm.
But my path in life was by design, I guess, or by choice, a more modest path, I would say, I was designing for myself. I was just starting to figure out how to move beyond, blues progressions or modal jamming, and it was kind of progressive rock that planted the idea in my hungry but nascent brain that I needed to really figure out some things about how music is put together and how to play the guitar. but I never really had any guitar instruction of note, other than very negative experiences. So it was kind of this long groping in the dark towards the light, kind of how I would describe my late teens, and John Coltrane being one of the brightest lights to follow.
To go from all of that and your more experimental sound to the album Lovers, which is decidedly less experimental. There is a little bit of the experimental side in it, but it's right. A very straight-ahead record as opposed to many of your other releases. Of course, you're not unfamiliar with playing in a more restrained setting anyway, most famously with Julian Lage and that beautiful album. You've demonstrated this before. So what is the difference in approach?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, Lovers is a long story, and the approach to Lovers was by design rather straightforward on certain pieces, because I was trying to capture a mood that was, referring to classic sort of smooth records that are, sometimes called mood music, and other times you would say maybe just have a high level of artistry, such as Sketches of Spain or Stan Getz Focus, or, a lot of the stuff has to do with not just the style of how to approach these various sort of more so-called straight-ahead pieces, but also the content of the songs themselves. That's why, some of the more adventurous or you might say experimental areas have to do with trying to establish a narrative, a mood that goes along with why that song is on the record. For example, in the theme from The Night Porter by Danielle Perry, we have a sort of sonic clouds of improvisation utilizing the sound of chains. My brother has some chains going, and I do this sort of detuned looping to create, I guess, a mood of apprehension and also maybe just kind of like dark excitement.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen the movie, then you understand why I would want to do that. Conversely, a piece like Beautiful Love is approached in a much more straight-ahead fashion, because the reason the song is there is because of my having heard people like Bill Evans and John Abercrombie play it. And it was John Abercrombie, the late, great John Abercrombie, who pointed out, who loved to point out that song originally appeared in the Boris Karloff movie The Mummy. And so, having checked out the version in the Boris Karloff The Mummy, it's in 3/4 and is a sort of a vocal group song, and so I wanted to refer to that at the introduction. And my my arranger and conductor pal, Michael Leonard, who brought all of his talents to bear on this project, really nailed this kind of retro intro and then a very straightforward reading of Beautiful Love, which is supposed to be, reverent to the song. So it's more straight ahead as a result. Although we do alternate between 4-4 and 3-4 during the soloing section, which is a nod to Bill Evans. There's just a lot of layers, Trevor. There are built-in homage to various guitar heroes of mine, like Jim Hall and Mark Rebo and Bill Frisell and Abercrombie, to be honest. I mean, these people they're all looming, lurking.
And you also have a lot of original tunes on this album as well that fit in beautifully with all the other songs. I mean, The Bed We Made and, of course, The Bond in particular really stood out to me. Just beautiful melodies. And I know The Bond you dedicated to your wife. And what a wonderful gift.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. Well, when I realized that we were going to end the record with an arranged version of The Bond, which was originally, as you are probably aware, a duet piece that I would play with Julian before that, then I knew that record was actually going to be a happier record than it was going to be when I was thinking about it back in the 80s.
Yeah.
It ends on a big G major chord. I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Does that mean I've grown up?
It sounds like life has turned out well for you, is what it sounds like.
You would be right.
Well, Nels Klein, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for everything. I appreciate that you actually play creative music on the radio, because the radio is magic to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the only way that I actually get to hear things that I don't expect to hear, because otherwise we just go on a list of what we think we know we want and try to find that. But if we just turn on the radio, then we're confronted with the unknown, with the unexpected. And that changed my life. It was, at the time, it was underground FM, but that was how I became aware of some of the most powerful music that I still treasure. You know, this reminds me also, that's a whole other phenomenon. I'm sort of happy now that I don't own a car anymore, but there's something about hearing music, especially driving on the flatlands at night with mm-hmm. the radio on.
Oh, yeah.
And your bond with that DJ and with whatever the narrative might be the DJ has going becomes really close and really, really magical. I think this is something very unique in particularly American culture, because as you go west, the distances become so great between places, and the connection to recorded sound in your car becomes really, really tight, you know, really powerful. So I do kind of miss that.
It's funny, because the first time I heard Wilco, I was on my way back from New York City. I was driving all the way back to New Mexico for my nephew's wedding. And I stopped. I took a detour down to Georgia to see my best friend. And he gave me Wilco's Ghost Is Born to listen to. Mm-hmm. So by the time I was driving again and I'm listening to A Ghost Is Born, and it gets to Less Than You Think, which has about a 15-minute drone at the end of it.
Yeah.
And I was driving through, I started on the other side of Memphis at that point, so I was driving through West Memphis at that point, which it very stark and dreary. It was the dead of night, and that is going on. And you just feel it, especially in the middle of the night, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then thankfully it let loose and broke into the late greats, and I'm like, oh thank God, I needed that release. But that is the power of music. The greatest lost track of all time, late greats, turpentine. You can't hear it on the radio, you can't hear it anywhere you go. The bell's bound. Happened to be a CD, but it is also the power of the radio, driving long distances, and that's the only friend you have for a long time, is who you hear on the other end.
And you'll become aware of things you never thought you'd become aware of. Sometimes shocking things, but, you know, it can be really, really interesting, and especially if you're driving on Sunday.
There you go. I feel like I have taken up a large part of your day right now. You've been very gracious, and I certainly appreciate it.
I'm moving forward into a little barbecue on the roof.
Well, that sounds pretty terrible. Now I feel bad for you.
I'm going to start chopping onions